inclusive of an FFS, maybe over an hour, I guess, right? Okay, and we're starting with Sarah McMonigan now. Monmouth Media were part of the crisis in cultural competence, and Sarah actually has, in this application, she was a PhD student. She's no longer a PhD student, Charles. She's Dr. Sarah McMonigan.
Okay, Sarah, you have 20 minutes, right?
Sure. Thank you. My paper today it's not a wholly academic paper, okay, but neither is it fully a policy proposal. I'm hoping that it will indicate that scholarship can inform policy when it comes to language learning and language usage in Ireland. My own background is in language policy, which I suppose that's a subset of sociolinguistics, but it very much spans linguistics, social sciences, and political theory. And today's paper, I'm going to address language abilities, language usage, and language attitudes in Ireland. Now, they are three massive areas that, you know, deserve a lot of attention in their own right. But today it has to be, you know, quite broad, sort of an overview, I suppose, in how, if we look at language abilities and language usage in Ireland, how can they inform aspirations towards better language learning and better language usage? That's really the sort of the direction that my paper is going to take. I would like to start with Eurobarometer, Pan-European Survey with the European Commission, especially Eurobarometer from 2006 on Europeans and their languages. And the opening question of that Eurobarometer is, which languages do you speak well enough in order to be able to have a conversation excluding your mother tongue? Now, I didn't put up every single member state because it's Friday afternoon and I think we should be spared statistics as much as possible. But that will give you some idea of what Ireland is up against. We're right down at the bottom. In fact, we're lower than the UK. I'm not sure that anyone would be surprised at that statistic, actually. It is generally just taken for granted in Irish society that we just don't do languages, which is not very good. And throughout my research, I would hear a lot of myths almost justifying why we're no good at languages. Ireland is an island, so there's just this linguistic isolation. And the second one I'll come to is everybody speaks English. But these myths can be very, very difficult to dispel because they do have elements of truth in them. It can be quite difficult to combat. Ireland is an island. Can't deny that. We don't have any natural linguistic interfaces, that's for sure. However, the notion that an island should be linguistically isolated is completely phony. It's just not correct. And we can take recourse to history in dispelling this. As an island, Ireland has seen plenty of to-ing and fro-ing and coming and going on the western reaches of Europe. Okay, so a little like whistle-stop tour on a historical linguistic trip around Ireland. We can start tracing our linguistic records back to the Celts. Their arrival is disputed somewhere between 300 and 500 BC. We're not really sure, but we know that when the Celts came, they brought Celtic languages. They displaced whatever was here before. We don't know exactly what it was. It was pre-Indo-European. The only pre-Indo-European surviving language in Europe today is the Basque language. It's the only one. We know the Celts came, they brought their languages. And after they came, they left again. And they brought Celtic languages to Scotland and the Isle of Man and Wales. And there are sort of our linguistic cousins on the island next door. When Christianity arrived in the 5th century, this was a massive watershed for language in Ireland because the Irish language adopted the Latin alphabet when Christianity arrived, and it also borrowed Latin terms, such as scriv, to write, would come from Latin, litter, letter, would come from Latin, sacer, for priest. This terminology was borrowed. Then with the arrival of the Vikings, of course the Irish language wasn't displaced by any of these arrivals, of course. What happened was they interacted and influenced one another. When the Vikings arrived, the Irish language again borrowed a lot of terminology. Their influence is traceable through the Irish language, such as the Irish word for ship, long, came from the Norsemen. Bior, directly taken from Old Norse, pronounced exactly the same for beer. Bjorn or North, Bjorn Irish, they're the same. Then the Normans from the 12th century, I suppose this is when sort of controversial Irish history begins. When the Normans came, they didn't just bring French. The Normans were an entirely multilingual grouping. They spoke Welsh, they spoke Frisian, they spoke Dutch, they spoke all sorts of things, and they arrived. And we still have sort of Norman influence in surnames, for instance, like Burke, and plenty of Roaches in Wexford. It's a French name. And then with the plantations from the 17th century was when we see the real influence of English coming into the island. But not only English, we have the influence of Scots, which is still in the sort of northeastern part of the island. And again, not an uncontroversial area for discussion, Ulster Scots. But I just want to show that historically Ireland has been multilingual. What happened was English arrived just at that time. Empire is becoming powerful. Ireland was subsumed into the British state and a project of language centralisation occurred. We all know the story. Irish became marginalised, not the language of education, commerce, power, anything like that, and Ireland became English speaking. And I would think that that's why we have poor attitudes to language learning, is that we're an Anglophone society. It's not because we're an island. Britain, right next door, is also a small island, and its language has risen to become the global lingua franca. So it's got nothing to do with being an island, it's got everything to do with being English speaking. The same Eurobarometer survey does point out that English is the most widely spoken foreign language in Europe. Unsurprising there, it is most frequently taught in schools in Europe as a second language. David Crystal, who's a Welsh linguist, says approximately 1 in 4 of the world's population are now capable of communicating to a useful level in English. But of course, that does mean that 3 out of 4 maybe aren't, but anyway. And Sue Wright, also quite a prominent scholar in language policy, has called it the prime language of social promotion. I don't think that anyone can disagree with that. I mean, even in academia, I mean, we know you have to publish in English, no matter where you're based, in order to get ahead. The Council of Europe has acknowledged the difficulty in Irish society of being an Anglophone society. This was from a Languages and Education report from 2006. There is a view commonly held that English is enough, that there is no need to learn other languages since English is a language of international communication. This view, however, ignores or dismisses the importance of language learning as the means by which we gain access to other societies and cultures. The reality of the prevalence of English means that the rest of Europe is becoming bilingual with English, whereas Anglophone countries, or predominantly Anglophone countries, like Ireland, are remaining monolingual. Okay? Because of that then, we see that English is less and less a commodity. It's more of an expectation in sort of international competition for jobs or, you know, like I said, in academia. English has less and less value. You should just have it. Okay? And even because English has risen to become, you know, the second language most frequently taught and learned, there is some concern for the learning of other languages, that they're not being as highly regarded. And there was the last Languages and Education report from Norway, I'd just like to mention, had a concern about language diversification, that Norwegians were learning English, 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 and perhaps were ignoring other languages of relevance. In order to sort of deal with the language diversity aspiration, what's frequently now known as Mother Tongue Plus Two, which was the Barcelona summit of the European Council in 2002, where the European Council of Ministers called for the teaching of at least 2 foreign languages from an early age in member states. I mean, this is a tall order for a country like Ireland, who, I mean, to learn 2 foreign languages seems like quite a big deal, but from an early age where we don't have any languages in primary, let alone in pre-primary. Now remember, a couple of weeks ago, PayPal announced 150 jobs for Ireland, which is whoop-de-doo for a time that we're in. PayPal are requiring fluency in English and fluency in one other European language. Who's going to get those jobs? Well, Irish people who have studied languages. So there's, you know, there's the case for learning a language already. It makes you more competitive with the job market. But I would be surprised if all 150 were recruited from within Ireland. I think that we're more than likely going to see people being recruited from outside Ireland, of course, who have English, because everybody's learning English. But either way, learning a language clearly makes you competitive. I did attempt to sort of find linguistic backgrounds of employees in, you know, Ireland that has eBay and Google and Microsoft, and the data protection doesn't allow me to find that out. So we can just maybe just assume for the moment. But bearing in mind that we do have to rely on the linguistic skills of others, I want to refer to the Nuffield Languages Inquiry, which took place in England in 2000. Sort of set against the background of England isn't learning languages well either. What should we do about it? And Nuffield said, "We are fortunate to speak a global language, but in a smart and competitive world, exclusive reliance on English leaves the UK vulnerable and dependent on the linguistic competence and the goodwill of others." Now, I like the approach in Nuffield because, you know, they do say, well, hey, look, we are fortunate to speak English. I mean, I think if you sort of go into developing a language strategy and say, oh, don't speak English, you know, to tell people they're wrong to speak English, it's not a very positive way to go about things. Australia did the same with their language policy, where they sort of said to Australians, look, let's value the type of English that we speak. I think, you know, Ireland could do the same. We're so proud of our Hibernian English and our traditions of literature and all the rest of it. So the Nuffield approach is good. But they are right to make the point that, you know, you're relying on other people when you don't have enough language skills in your society. coming from Nuffield, a number of language strategies were developed in the UK. England pretty much developed theirs straight after Nuffield, called Languages for All, a strategy that totally looked at languages and education. What can the education system do? Scotland then developed its strategy on the languages of Scotland, just what's spoken within Scotland. Now, I know that strategy has been discontinued. I don't know for what reason, but since the SNP were elected, the strategy was discontinued. Wales also developed a strategy specifically for modern foreign languages, and where they said, well, we have this tradition of bilingualism. You know, let's build on that to embrace the learning of other languages. Now, you know, you could get me straight away and say, well, yes, of course, Ireland, you know, we do have plenty of languages spoken. Constitutionally, we are a bilingual state. We can't get around that. Of course, we don't just have to look at the constitution from which came the Official Languages Act in 2003. The Gaelscoileanna are certainly very successful. The current debate inspired by Enda Kenny notwithstanding. Irish Sign Language is also an indigenous language of the island, which is very frequently overlooked. There are about 5,000 deaf people in Ireland who use ISL, but that's not just the extent, that's just not the full extent of the language being used. There are about 40,000 users, because deaf people who use ISL have families and colleagues and carers and friends and networks. Okay, and then of course migration into Ireland, very interesting discussion 2 weeks ago here on that. And so we have an increasing number of migrant languages being spoken. Now, we need a lot more research on migrant languages in Ireland, whether language attrition is occurring in migrant groups or whether it's being preserved. We do know that in the last census, 600,000 people who filled in the census said they weren't born in Ireland. That'll give us some clues as to, you know, the other languages that are spoken. The census this year, for the first time, is going to ask people, do they speak anything other than Irish or English, which is great. We wouldn't want to rely too much on census figures, of course, to inform policy. A lot more has to be done. They don't give you a full picture. And as I said, a lot more has to be done in this area. But there was a research report just published in 2010 by Lorna Carson in Trinity and Gert Ekstra at the University of Tilburg, who did a pilot study on a group of primary schools in Dublin, just a small sample. And after Irish and English, the most frequently spoken language by these children was Tagalog. and then it was Europa, and then we had the usual what you might predict, Polish and Ukrainian and Moldovan and all the rest of it. But we do need a lot, lot more, but we do know other languages are spoken. So, have I just completely contradicted myself? I called this paper Monolingual Ireland, and now I'm presenting Multilingual Ireland. I could have called it Multilingual Ireland, but we're still dealing with the same crisis. We still don't speak enough languages, we still don't embrace the value of language diversity. I mean, you look at any of these language groups, and they do, they tend to constitute a yeah, but, you know. So we all know I wouldn't like to call it a debate, we do know the palaver in the Irish language at the moment. You know, inspired by independence, wanting to take compulsion away from the language. And what the fallout from this tends to happen in sort of letters to the editor of various newspapers, where we have a whole lot of people saying, Irish no, and we have a whole lot of people going, Irish yes, that's not a debate. You know, the country has a duty to the language, it should be Irish how, you know, no matter what way you feel about it, but yes or no, isn't. It's not a mature debate anyway, and it doesn't seem to embrace the value of having an Indigenous language, where, let's face it, the last native speaker hasn't been born. I mean, it's far from dead. We consider Irish Sign Language, I said, it's very overlooked. A lot of people just don't know much about it, but a sign language would be seen to be an aid to a disability, and not necessarily a language in its own right. Serious? Okay. And then, of course, with migrant languages, they're only ever framed as a problem. It's always a problem. You know, how can we get these kids to learn English? They're not integrated. No. Of course the families are going to send them, the kids are going to go to school in Ireland, of course they have to speak English. But there is, I think there's a problem in the way that language ability is viewed here. For instance, we have kids who come from Africa who already speak perhaps two African languages. They may have come through Holland, they may have come through Norway to come to Ireland. They speak a variety of languages. Because they haven't acquired English, they're seen to be handicapped in a certain respect. Whereas a teacher who may be a monolingual English speaker is not seen in the same respect. You know, that the linguistic capital of our new citizens has got to be recognised as a pretty good resource. And another thing is, the people who make up these groups are achieving the mother tongue plus two. So what to do with the rest of us? Us then, whatever way we're talking about it. Report from the Council of Europe correctly pointed out that there is no explicit national language education policy. And I think that most people would feel that to take care of the linguistic deficit, it has to happen in education. Okay? But the country still doesn't have a policy to do that. We have a policy for the Irish language, which is questionable in terms of its successes, but we don't have an overall one. We're all, you know, well aware languages are not taught in the primary school. We're very much out in the cold on that in Europe. Britain has begun introducing languages in the primary school. We're still behind. There is a primary languages initiative in the country that currently supports about 10% of primary schools, and only in 5th and 6th class. Okay. Majority of students do study a modern foreign language in post-primary. This is true. As I said Friday afternoon, I didn't want to bombard anyone with statistics, but when we look at the numbers taking French for junior cert and then leaving cert, and then going on to higher education, it's going down. Every time, it's going down. Language is a third level, which I think was important to bring up today in the context of higher education. The Council of Europe's report, again, the years 1997-2005 have been difficult for university language departments, as there has been a decline in students studying languages. Some of those difficulties in higher education, declining numbers, first of all, language departments emerged. We have yet to see the crisis that the UK has in language departments closing down. You know, German is closing in Queen's, it's already closed Italian. The pressure to lecture through English, nowhere else in Europe would, you know, if you went to Germany and people were studying English, it wouldn't be done through German, but languages here are taught through English. Part of that is trying to attract students from other degree courses to take a language as well, of course. There has been a reluctance of students to travel to the country of the target language for any prolonged period, and also students are turned off literature. Sorry, I'm kind of like flying through some of the last few points at the moment. Some of those consequences, higher education produces language teachers for second level. And should we ever introduce languages to primary, higher education will be producing them as well. So if there are poor standards in higher education, you're going to feel those consequences throughout the system. Each of these points on the consequences of not learning languages are so massive. There are the cognitive benefits, the ability to think outside the box, which has been demonstrated by a number of psycholinguists. We don't have the skills for business, which I've demonstrated with the where I discussed in terms of the big odd jobs. Implications for interculturalism, somewhat also discussed, and which may come up in 2 weeks' time. I think there's a paper on policing and intercultural skills, and also questions of equality and democracy. There are rights, people do have rights to use their mother tongue. I would suggest that if Ireland is going to formulate a language education policy, that it takes account both of the negative attitudes that exist in this Anglophone society, but that it also takes account of the resources that we have. Big task, I know. Charles was great that he spoke so many languages, I have to give him that much. But sometimes, I hear this frequently, oh, Spanish is so lively. I worked on a language attitudes survey in Northern Ireland for the last couple of years, and we were asking parents what, you know, their children should learn from school. Spanish is such a lively language, which I always took as code for I like sangria. German is so harsh, it's like, well, actually, English is Germanic, you know, but don't make those connections. There are some cynical developments in public debate in Ireland on what languages are for. Kate Holmquist in the Irish Times, the paper of record. The best argument of all, I would never say that in a paper, but I just didn't say that in a paper, against the compulsory learning of Irish is that we are now multicultural, where many languages are spoken. Multiculturalism is utterly undermined if you think you can pick and choose what goes into it. There is no multiculturalism if you're saying, yeah, that and that and that, but no, not that. But I do find this is a cynical development in public discussion. And so I'm going to finish up with what I think would be a very useful premise to become a better country in learning languages is a recognition of the resources we already have, bilingual country, Irish sign language, immigrant languages, and to build on that, to embrace other languages. What Wales did is that let's look at our bilingual culture, because bilingualism is your step to multilingualism. You can't ignore bilingualism. You can't smash it and start from zero to get to multilingualism. You need to use that step along the way.
Okay, thanks.